Emotional intelligence is like a big bucket of skills. It's got motivation, it's got compassion, it's got self-discipline, it's got all of this stuff in it. And for a long time, empathy was thrown into this bucket. But my research is saying, no, empathy's got to come first. Because first you have to understand which emotional intelligence skill you need to reach for. And the only way to do that is to connect with that person. Otherwise, you're just grabbing skills and hoping you're close. And the only way to know empathy for another person is to know empathy for yourself.
Welcome to the Shift Your Day Job podcast. I'm Brittany Cates, career coach and fellow career shifter, here to help you leave unfulfilling work behind. Every Thursday, I share stories, strategies, and confidence-boosting insights to help you gain clarity, take action, and create a career you love. Let's shift your day job together. Hello, and welcome to the Shift Your Day Job podcast. Today's guest is Melissa Robinson Weinmiller, a former college professor and classical musician who made a bold transition from academia to a new career. After facing a life-changing event during her time in higher education, Melissa shifted her focus to research and coaching, specializing in empathy and emotional intelligence. She is passionate about helping others develop strong leadership skills and personal growth, particularly through the power of empathy. I'm excited to have her on the show to share her inspiring journey and the valuable insights that she's gained along the way. So please join me in welcoming Melissa to the podcast. Hi, Melissa. Welcome to the Shift Your Day Job podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, and I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me, Brittany.
You're welcome. I'm so glad that you're here. I'm interested to hear about your experience as a college professor because I taught elementary school, so in the same career vein, and I would just love to hear where you are now and what you're doing. What's brought you here?
Yeah, because it's completely different in a different world in a different time. So I was a musician and a professor. I played French horn. I was a classical musician. I loved it. I'd been involved in music since I was really little. And you get to a point when you're doing stuff like that, that it's not just what you do, it's who you are. I am an elementary teacher. I am a musician. I am a mom, whatever it is, it all goes together. But so I'd been a musician. Discovered that I am hopelessly addicted to food, shelter, and clothing. So when decide to be a teacher, because they do provide those things, you know, extended my education, went to become a professor. But within my very first term of being there, I was actually assaulted by one of my colleagues. Over the course of 7 years, I was denied tenure, and I ended up having to leave the field. It all coincided within a couple years of COVID. And a lot of other problems with the arts, a lot of problems with academia. And it just became really obvious that I was going to have to figure something out. And that's how I got into what I'm doing now. Because now I research and I still teach to a certain degree, more like coaching, less like teaching. But I talk about empathy and emotional intelligence. And it comes directly from what I had been doing before. Because I couldn't figure out what had gone so wrong, how everything went so wrong, why I couldn't get people to listen to me, what was so broken in this system that they were happy to just brush it under the rug. And there's a lot of gory details I'm leaving out just because we're here to talk about other things. But that is the beginning. Like Spider-Man, he's got an origin story. I guess that's my origin story.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is interesting how our pain becomes our purpose in life. And it's the challenges we face and the struggles that we face that after we are able to move through them, we want to help other people who might have the same experiences. And so thank you for being open about that, because there are a lot of reasons people might want or need a job transition. And when I think of a toxic work environment, my initial thoughts don't go there. I don't even know what words to use to describe it. It's usually more along the lines of I have a manager that I hate or something like that. But there are levels. And I know that in my experience in the education system, I could see a lot of things that were wrong or not up to par of what it should be, because people who go into education want to serve because they care about others, but they're not cared for in the process. And yes. So I'm sorry that you had to go through that. Because, and I can't imagine, but also I think there are a lot of people that could probably relate. So thank you for sharing.
Yeah, you bet. And that is partially why I finally, because when I got out, I spun my wheels for about 7 years trying to figure out what happens next. But the more people I talked to and the more people I ran into, the more similarities than differences there were. And it's like, why are we allowing this to happen? Why is this okay? And I think some of the younger generations are not so willing to put up with it. And it's creating real problems in the workforce. And I keep hoping maybe all that had to happen so that I could do this and make a difference with what I'm doing now. Because, you know, societally, empathy is a thing right now. We could use it from the top to the bottom, not just leadership, not just in workplaces. We all could.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what is it that helped you uncover that this was the path you wanted to pursue, that this was like a mission of this idea of empathy and helping people with emotional intelligence or whatnot? Mm-hmm. And how did you even know that was like a career? How did you get to that point?
I didn't. It's more like it chose me. I left where I was at and did a cross-country move and was like, okay, I'm going to restart what I'm doing. I'm going to figure it out. But it kept chewing in the back of my brain. Why did this have to happen? Because I was perfectly happy being a musician. I liked being that person. I liked playing my French horn. I loved the students. They would be surprised to hear that sometimes because I could be a little rough, but it was always because I wanted them to do better. And I just couldn't quite get past the why did this have to happen? And in the back of my mind, what kept coming up was there was a lack of connection. Somehow I could not connect with these people to get them to understand. I think the system had them so beaten down that I was just one small microcosm of a much bigger thing because it was university wide by the time I was done. I talked to HR, I talked to the union, I talked to the ombuds, who's supposed to be the person who runs interference for faculty. I talked to anybody who would listen and nobody heard me. So it was like, what is the problem here? And is it even bigger than I think? Because in those 7 years in between too, I held other leadership roles. I worked in healthcare. My husband and I did some coaching and consulting in the healthcare arena. And I just kept running into this lack of connection. So I started digging. And what I figured out is when we talk about empathy, we have this idea that it's always about feeling, but it's not. That's part of it. That's a big part of it, but it's not all of it. It's about connection and understanding. And that's what was missing. So I started a doctorate in interdisciplinary leadership, but my dissertation is empathy and leadership. And the path chose me, but I'm on it now.
Yeah. That's amazing. You use the word, now I'm stuck in it, but it's not really stuck because
no,
you pursued it and you started uncovering things and you're like, okay, this is what I want to be focusing on doing. And then you took additional steps to increase your knowledge by getting your degree and doing all these other things to move it forward. I love that this is like your mission now. I keep using that word, but that's what it feels like to me. You have a message that I love that today society is more open. Like we're becoming more open talking about things like mental health and emotional health, trauma, things that were often swept under the rug. A big undertaking. So every little bit counts. And I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
Can you maybe tell a little bit about how you implement this? Do you coach people or do you have, I don't know, what do you do to express this?
How do you do this?
People?
Yeah. And that's a great question because that empathy is one of those things that people are like, oh, you can't teach it. And I think if you're dealing with people that absolutely have none, that yeah, you can't teach it. But luckily, research says there's only a really small percentage of society that just has none. And they fall into this dark triad of the psychopaths and the narcissists and the Machiavellians. And even with them, there's different kinds of empathy you can teach. There's actually 43 different kinds. The emotional, I feel what you feel, is one. And they can do cognitive empathy, which is where I understand what you feel. And I might even be able to react in a way that's acceptable or society would understand, that sort of thing. So when I go in and I'm coaching, that's actually usually where I start. I start with cognitive empathy and this idea of being able to understand what's going on. And the way I do that, actually backing it up one step further, is talking about self-empathy, which is something a lot of people, especially in these leadership positions, don't always have. They've got to be strong. They've got to be tough. They've got to be absolute. They must be the leader. And in doing that, they don't pay attention to their own needs. They don't pay attention to their own lives, which is why they may have 6 divorces, or they may have substance abuse, or they may be the one that's pushing everybody to do 20-hour days, but are doing 22-hour days. And there also tends to be a lot of imposter syndrome, because a lot of these people get into these positions not because they're fantastic leaders, but because they're fantastic technicians. I brought in the most contracts. I'm the best salesman. I have the best contacts. And now I'm supposed to lead everybody else in how to do this. So the combination of these things tends to create this lack of self-empathy. They don't really know their own feelings or their own mind or can relate to what's going on inside them, which is really unhealthy. Talk about mental health and not being able to tap into that for yourself. So when I'm coaching, that's where I start. Because luckily, for the most part, since 95 to 98% of the population has empathy, it's not so much teaching it, it's learning how to practice it.
A few things run through my mind as you're talking about that. One is I have a recent guest that I talked to, and her mission is fixing management, like the way that managers manage people. Because of this that you're talking about, people are often put into leadership roles because of what they can do and not because they are going to be a good leader or a good manager. And so then this perpetuates an issue of being empathetic, not being able to train properly or help people through the challenges that inevitably come up in the workplace. Fascinating, just in the respect of, I didn't think of it as empathy, but you're right. And then the other piece of it is how you start with their own self-empathy. And I can resonate with that because I feel like something I've been working on for a long time is like having more. And I think it's the same concept, essentially, like having empathy for yourself and or compassion for yourself. And we always have to start with ourselves. We can't. I know that there is like this level of, I can be compassionate towards others and love and care for them, even if I'm not feeling it for myself. But your capacity to do that for others is going to be so much greater when you can do it for yourself as well.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, without a doubt. And I think in part of what you're saying as well is just general self-awareness. So a large part of what I teach is called perspective taking. How would you feel if someone treated you the way you just treated them? But it doesn't necessarily happen if because they don't have the self-empathy. They don't know how it feels. So if they don't know how it feels, then how can they do perspective taking? If they don't give compassion, they have no idea how to if they don't know how to do it for themselves, they don't know how to do it for somebody else. Or at the very least, they're going through the motions. Emotional intelligence is like a big bucket of skills. It's got motivation. It's got compassion. It's got self-discipline. It's got all of this stuff in it. And for a long time, empathy was thrown into this bucket. Yeah. But my research is saying, no, empathy's got to come first. Because first, you have to understand which emotional intelligence skill you need to reach for. And the only way to do that is to connect with that person. Otherwise, you're just grabbing skills and hoping you're close. And the only way to know empathy for another person is to know empathy for yourself.
How do you start that? Do you, in my mind, it's, okay, where is there something that I am really hard on myself about or I judge myself about really often? And is that how you start with somebody?
Yeah.
Empathy?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes if they don't have a lot of self-awareness and they're blind to it, that's where you start with the people closest to them. if I'm doing an actual full thing with someone, I want to talk to the people they work with. I want to talk to their staff, assistants. I want to know how they treat other people. If I can, I want to talk to family and friends, because those people are going to be able to say, yeah, there's this pattern of behavior. My favorite is always, I have empathy. I have no doubt you have empathy. Most of us have empathy. But are you using empathy? I gave to the United Way. Okay, that's charity and that's good. Yeah. Do that. But it's still not the same as using empathy. So let's back up and take a look at some of this and see what your behaviors are actually saying.
Because I think, especially for the newer generation, like being more open to talking about issues that have been around for a while. We also have lots of examples of that older generation in our lives where we can see exactly that. I have empathy. I do this and I treat people this way or whatever, but that self-awareness piece isn't there. I can just think of different situations that is very similar to. I think everybody has that, because I read somewhere recently, right now we have 3 to 4 generations of people living on the planet, and we're all in different categories of how we think. Yeah. And so we're trying to manage all of that at once, if that makes any sense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really accurate. And that's exactly where perspective taking comes in. So I'm Gen X. I'd like to pretend I'm not Gen X. I'd like to be a whole lot younger, but I am. I'm Gen X. And, you know, I don't know what it is to be Gen Z and to have been brought up with a phone, basically having a mobile computer in my hands all the time, having instant access to information, but also because of social media, being in the spotlight, maybe from the day I was born. I don't know what that is exactly from experience, but by understanding that I don't understand, I can start to at least try to take that perspective taking and say, this is really different from my experience, where if I didn't want to answer the phone, I left the answering machine on and left. It wasn't in my pocket. If I didn't want to talk to someone, they weren't going to track me on Facebook or Instagram. It's just a whole different way of, especially in those formative years between 0 and 7 or 10, it's just a different way of approaching life altogether. But if we all tried a little more perspective taking, we're never going to understand everything everybody else is going through, but we might get a little better idea. And the really cool thing about it is what you give tends to be what you get. So if I'm giving empathy and someone sees this and recognizes it and is doing the perspective taking of understanding that my intentions are good and I'm trying, then they're probably more willing to give it back to me.
Yeah, it goes back to when you were talking about earlier about this lack of connection. And that's really what it is when people are judging one another. It is because they lack the connection and understanding of one another. And so you can put those people in the same room. You love people that are part of your world because you get to know them on a different level because of the connection piece. And so as long as you're open and willing to understand that person to the best that you can, then that's where loving one another comes in. And therefore, that's where community starts.
Yes, especially during a time when loneliness is an epidemic. We need it now more than ever. It's becoming pretty serious, especially in talking about mental health and human connection. We as humans aren't meant to be involved with technology 24/7. We're just not. This is a fairly recent thing, and it's creating serious problems in mental health, in physical health, in the career world, all of it. Imagine if we each just increased our empathy and our understanding by 1%.
And because everything starts at home, it starts with one person. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. It's called emotional contagion. And I think it's like the coolest concept because it really does spread like a disease. So, you know, if we can spread the bad stuff, why don't we spread the good stuff?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. And technology is a tool to do that, but we have to find that balance to where it's not overtaking us. And I also think when you're talking about the epidemic of loneliness, you feel like you're connecting with people when you're online, but you're by yourself. And where your focus goes, your attention grows.
I gotcha.
when you're in your own space, you're online with your own agenda. But if you're in a real life situation with diverse people, you're getting exposure to new things and then opening yourself to more learning and understanding of others rather than living in your bubble of this is what I think or my opinions.
Yeah, you just actually hit on one of my favorite definitions of empathy, because the definition, I wish I could remember who said it right now. And of course I can't. I will as soon as we're done.
Yeah.
But it is, empathy is what allows me to get out of my bubble and into yours. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly right, because I leave my bubble behind so that I can understand you. And I think with AI and some of the interactions that we're having with AI and stuff, this is becoming even more important, because talk about an echo chamber. It can come across as being human, and it's not. It's an incredibly powerful tool. But now there are people committing suicide and stuff because of what AI tells them to do. And there was a teenager not that long ago that whatever had happened, he managed to get the algorithm to do whatever, to say, you're worthless, should kill yourself, this kind of thing. If we don't start connecting as human beings, it's only coming on bigger and stronger.
Yeah, absolutely. And so again, coming back to this, it starts in your home.
Yes.
Here's the thing about technology that we all know. It can be used for good or it can be used for terrible things. And it's our job as individuals to use these tools in a more productive, positive way to make the world better, right? But one thing that I've learned recently is, like, there's this concept of, some people think that if you have a lot of money, that makes you a bad person. We have these weird preconceived ideas about money. All of us have something different. Yeah. But really, money is just a tool that amplifies whatever you already are. If you're a bad person and you get lots of money, you're probably going to use it for not good things. But if you're a good person and you have lots of money, that's going to amplify the good things that you do. And I think technology is another example of that type of tool.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Because at the end of the day, we're just human beings being human. What we do with the tools around us are going to be very human things, whether they're good or they're bad. And a lot of that depends on where your focus is. Is your focus on the me, or is your focus on the we? Not to say that anyone is completely one or completely the other, but there's a balance there. And if it's completely on the me, that's how you get the narcissists and the psychopaths. If you could actually bring in the we, that's how you get people with more empathy and emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
The elementary teacher, you know how younger people, younger kids will soak this up. So this is something that we need to be talking about and needs to be out there. And those of us that are adults need to be showing what this is.
Definitely. And teaching our kids the empathy, because they're not going to, curriculum wise, they're not going to get it at school.
No.
Yeah.
They're not going to get it in college either.
The world of academia and education right now, it just keeps getting more and more narrow of focus. And it's not looking at the whole human being and the whole life experience. And so it doesn't prepare you for everything.
Yeah, we're in total agreement there.
I love this conversation. It's a little off topic, like a little, but I love this kind of stuff. So
yeah,
when it comes to this change that you've made over time in your career and the challenges you face and then the trying to figure out what's next, can you talk about, like, your support system through that, or and how you work through it with other people? We're talking about other people being a part of our lives. And so how did that look for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think a lot of people, when they go through that pivot, it's like you said, it comes from something happened. And now what do I do? And I think I'm probably not the only one who went through the trying to disentangle myself from what I thought I was, which is one reason for me, I fought the people at the university for 7 years before I got out and then spun for another 7. And people I've talked to since then, your own person gets really wrapped up in what you do. So I think that was the first big thing, is having people that I could talk to that said, yeah, you are a musician. It's what you do, but it's not who you are. And maybe there's other things out there that you haven't even considered. My husband, especially. We didn't meet until quite a bit later. We were both over 40, and he's been fantastic. And maybe because, since he didn't know me until I was older, he could look at me from the outside and say, maybe you should look at this, your behavior. You sure do like to read and study. Maybe you need to try something else. You keep talking about this lack of connection. Where does that go? When I knew I was going to make a pivot, and I was just, I don't know. I don't have any idea. I just know I can't stay here anymore. We actually took the time to sit down and start thinking outside the box. What do you want to do that you haven't done before? What are things that maybe you've always thought you could do? And the first thing we laid down is age is not a factor. And we're going to pretend that money is no factor. We're just going to write and figure out where your dream is. I was listening to another one of your guests, Virtue. Jennifer Virtue?
Lisa
Virtue. Yeah. And she was talking about the life is short, that you reach a certain point that you're like, I just don't want to do this anymore. I don't know what I want to do. I don't know if I just want to get out or if I want to wait until I get another job. I don't know what's happening next. But you have to understand that life is short and it's limited. So if you could do anything you wanted to do unrestricted, what would that be? And then back it up from there. Because when I started, I actually started going back for an MBA. I'm like, okay, I don't want to do what I'm doing. I don't really know what I'm going to do next, but I know I'm going to need some pieces. And this seems like as good a place to start as any. And it was something I'd always wanted to do. I'd been involved in music my whole life, but I didn't know if I could do other things. I didn't know if I could study anymore. So first, just getting rid of that idea that I fit in this mold, and then opening myself up to how many different molds there are out there. And I have a feeling that there's probably lots of people in your audience that have struggled with some of those same things.
Yeah, absolutely. I like to talk about that because I know that there was a time period where I went through that. Like, I'm in the thick of teaching and I'm feeling like, this is it. This is all I know. This is familiar. I'm good at this. Like, I don't know what else I would do. And yet I got to a point where similarly, I was like, no, this doesn't define me. But I can think of other teachers that I know that it really defines them. And because they've been doing it longer and there are different factors involved, I think, like thinking they always wanted to be a teacher. Whereas I never started there. I didn't grow up thinking I was going to be a teacher. So I think that helped a little bit. But yeah, absolutely. Opening yourself up to this idea of what else is out there and recognizing that there's so many opportunities, especially nowadays when there's so many things, so many online entrepreneurial businesses, like you could do anything. It's at our fingertips. And yet,
yeah,
we still live in this idea of I went to school for this and I've been working here for X amount of years and this is who I am and I can't change. Like it again, I think it comes from this generational. I love that you mentioned you sat down with your husband and you were like, okay, if money wasn't a factor, if age wasn't a factor, and that's an exercise I've talked about on the podcast as well. It's, okay, let's remove these things that feel like they're limiting us and let's just open it up and let's dream big. And then, yeah, you can always, like you said, back it up down the line. But I think it's really important because if you don't do that, then you are keeping yourself restricted to what you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why I ended up on a really twisty path, because it's not like someone says, I'm going to be an empathy person. That's not something that there's a direct path to. Yeah. But because we started with what is it that's interesting or what is it you want to follow or what is it you want to pursue? It's okay, these are the things that are important. Okay, now let's reverse engineer it. How do you do that? You're already reading on the computer. You're already Googling the heck out of it. If you actually want to pursue this as something serious, then let's figure out how to do that. And I think figuring out where that passion is, especially when you're pivoting and you're into doing the next thing, is important because it's what sustains you.
Yeah, absolutely. What is my next step? And I read a book this past week that was talking about the difference between passion and purpose, and how if you find a career that is purposeful to you, then you will be, it will continue to provide you with enough momentum to keep doing it. And so I think that you're talking about passion, but you have a purpose in what you're doing, which is married to the passion. Like, they go hand in hand. And so you have a drive behind this passion of yours that's going to keep you sustained throughout however your career evolves. Because when we are working, we want to continuously be challenged to the point of not being so overwhelmed that we give up, but just enough that we want to keep going and keep pursuing and learning and growing.
Yeah, absolutely. What I'm hearing and what you're saying is this idea of a growth mindset, continually learning, continually being open, continually looking forward instead of stagnating in one place. And I think that's really important. Without it, you just tend to spin in one spot. And even though I loved what I was doing in music, and I couldn't have imagined myself doing anything else, there was a little bit of that this is all I know how to do. This is where I'm at. I guess this is where I'm staying. So on some really bizarre level, I'm almost grateful for what happened because it pushed me out of my comfort zone. And now I have something that I think has a much wider reach and a real need. So maybe it was supposed to happen that way. I don't know.
Yeah. And that's the thing. This other book I've been reading, because I can't help myself, is The Gap in the Game with Benjamin Hardy.
Yeah.
If you're familiar with that, right? You know, one of the things that he talks about is you get to decide what your past experiences mean, because they're yours. And you can either look at them as negatives and how they ruined your life or whatever it is you want to do. Or you can say, okay, this has actually led me to this, and I can see the growth I've had from it. And I'm grateful that's what happened, but I can see how it's brought me here today, and I can be grateful.
Yeah.
We get to choose our perspective.
And that's the other thing I figured out with this pivot, because it seems to keep evolving. So I started it and, okay, I think I probably thought I was going to get my doctorate and go back into academia. But then that turned into writing, which has turned into speaking, which has turned into more coaching. And by just evolving with it and allowing it to take me where it was going, I don't know if 2 years ago I would have seen myself on a stage, but now I can reach all sorts of people that way. So why not? And as people are pivoting and looking at other things, breaking out of that mindset of it has to be in this step and this step, and just being open to the evolution, I think there's a certain excitement in that too. If you think you're going to be in the same person, the same cog, in the same machine forever, and all of a sudden, maybe I really can be Wonder Woman in my own way, doing my own thing with my own stuff. I'm not beholden to my past experiences and to what society says I should do.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big one too.
Yeah, definitely. Because the more we take action and take steps towards our desired goal, then we're proving to ourselves what we can do. And it gives us like this bolt of like excitement of, oh, if I could do that, then maybe I can do this.
Exactly. And no action is too small. Just start somewhere. Put on your shoes, go for a walk and think about it. Start a list that has no boundaries. Just, you can do anything. Start somewhere and just see where it goes.
Yeah. And I think a few examples that come to my mind are, I've started working out with a personal trainer, which if I didn't have a personal trainer, it wouldn't happen. It hasn't happened for however long until I did this, until I made this commitment. But having that accountability and having that person there to push me has helped me to be like, oh, look what I did. Look what my body can do. And for the longest time, I'm like, I couldn't do that. And totally scared to do it. And I guess my other example is a client of mine talking about how she ran a marathon and she never thought she could do that. But she had a good friend that she was doing it with that pushed her and helped her. And so having some kind of support and accountability along the way is going to make a huge difference for people, yeah. No matter what you're doing, to help you start recognizing what you can do and then build that momentum.
Yep. You're back to connection and understanding. Makes me happy.
Yeah. We need that.
Yeah.
As much as absolutely. We might not realize it. You know?
Yeah. I don't think I would have done it, at least maybe not to the degree or not as quickly, without my husband's support. And we all need it. And having that person in our lives that can say, yeah, you can do this. I don't know that I understand what you're trying to do, but you can, no matter what, you're still making that connection and creating those connections and those inroads with other people. And next thing, you've both gone farther and risen higher than you thought you ever could.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
We serve each other. Like when you serve somebody and let that person serve you, you're both growing in different ways.
Yeah. And especially that let that person serve you. Sometimes people have trouble with that because they think it's a weakness. And no, that's why there's such a thing as a servant leader. You're open to allowing other people to also be able to give you what you can then give back. It's a big cycle. It's that big infinity symbol, and it all just keeps coming around.
One last thing I wanted to ask you about is, can you share any like tools or exercises that people could do to start having more empathy for themselves and opening their minds up to possibility?
Absolutely. So just as far as self-awareness, starting to dig in and figure out where some of this stuff lies, you just can't beat journaling or what I call micro meditations, where you actually take the time to think about it for even minutes at a time. My actions did this. What was the result? That person seemed really upset when I did this. Why is that? Did I cause this or was it something else? But instead of just brushing it off, taking a moment to say, the way I shut down this person's comments during the board meeting, it really seemed to have an effect where everybody just suddenly shut down altogether. What did my actions have to do with that? Mm-hmm. One way that I suggest people kind of start doing this is using the 5 whys. And this is a business thing. It was in production where you continue to ask the question why until you get to the root cause. But for us as human beings, we have a tendency to bury the actual root cause under a bunch of stuff to protect ourselves. We have expectations, either from ourselves or from society, a lot of times from our parents, from our peers, that sort of thing. And we internalize these expectations. We'll compare ourselves against those expectations. And comparison isn't bad. It just means you're looking at two things to see how they're different. The problem is when that comparison turns into judgment, because now you're saying these two things are different and this one is better. So now you've got the expectation, you've got a comparison, you've got that judgment. And you need to figure out what the real feeling is underneath. So for example, for me, when I was growing up, my expectation from my parents was that I was going to stay married forever and ever, and it was going to be wonderful, and it was going to be just like Beaver Cleaver, and everything was going to be great. This was instilled in me very young. So when I got divorced, I was comparing myself against them and against the other people in my social circle who were getting married and having kids. My judgment was there must be something broken with me because I can't meet this expectation. Why do you think you're broken? Now we're getting to the 5 whys. Because everybody else around me can do it and it seems to be easy, so I must be broken. Why do you think it's easy? Because everyone else can do it. Why do you feel that this expectation applies to you? It doesn't. So if the expectation doesn't apply to me, I must not be broken. Therefore, I don't have to judge myself harshly based on what I'm seeing as my own failing. Why do you feel you're a bad leader? Because I just watched this person devolve to tears in the boardroom and I don't know why they did it. Why do you think something happened that made it happen? I said something snarky to them and this is what happened. Why do you think that was okay as a leader? Because my leaders did it to me, so this is how it must be to be a leader. But even if they did that before, why do you think this applies to you? The answer is it doesn't. I want to be a better leader than that. So now that I'm in touch with how this all came down, how can I be a better leader next time by actually connecting with this person and connecting with myself to understand that I don't have to keep doing the same things. I can do it a better way. You dig into your journal and you start asking why until you can get to a root cause. But usually it takes at least five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love the part where it's, why do I think this applies to me? Or does this apply to me? And again, it comes down to, we have the choice. Are we going to allow it to apply to us? Do we believe it?
Yeah.
Do we truly, is that how we want to live our lives? And maybe at the surface level, you're like, yeah, it applies to me. But if you really sit with it, you're like, no, this doesn't feel good to me. This is not who I want to be or how I want to show up or how I want to measure myself. And yeah, so I think that's really important to give yourself grace in those moments and allow yourself to really decide for yourself. That's what we're really getting to the root of, because we live in society or culture, wherever we are, and we just fall into place often. And maybe that's not
right,
where we're meant to be, and we're allowed to make a different choice.
Yeah. And I think that comes back to our career choices as well. This is just what I do. Why? Because my mom did it. So that's what I should do. Why does that apply to you? Because this is what I was taught growing up. So therefore, this is what I should be doing. Why? Does it actually apply to you? No, it doesn't. I have a choice. Exactly like you said, I don't have to just blindly keep moving forward. I can think about it and say, this isn't really serving me and it doesn't really suit me. I can do something else. Let's find something that does suit me.
Oftentimes it's feelings that have gotten you to this place where you're questioning. And so why am I feeling this way? Oh, maybe it doesn't suit me. Maybe this isn't meant for me then, because I want to feel a certain way. And I say it all the time, like, our careers, our jobs take up a lot of our time. Let's do something that we're not going to be miserable at 75% of our lives.
And the flip side too is, if you get to the end of that and you go, you know what, this really does suit me and it really is what I want to do, now you've verified it. So either way.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Melissa. I love this conversation. I love what you do. And I'm really glad that you were able to share it here on my podcast. Thank you.
Thank you. And I really appreciate you having me on. And I know I talked about empathy a lot. If it weren't for the pivot that I had gone through and the career stuff that had happened before and after, I wouldn't be here. So what you talk about and what you're doing is so important, because there could be anybody out there listening at any time making the same decisions and doing the same stuff. Even if we were just all happier and more fulfilled in what we were doing, it'd make for a much nicer planet.
And if anybody wants to learn more from you or learn more about you, where can they connect?
You can always catch me on LinkedIn and Instagram, or you can go to my website, which is EQVIA, V as in Victor, IA, empathy. So it's EQVIA empathy. You can connect to me with email. You can find all my social media links. My book will be coming out in Q1, so beginning of next year. And there's a pre-order link there. And I love interacting with people. I have a YouTube channel where I talk about this stuff. So yeah, please, let's engage. It's all about connection. So let's connect.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Melissa.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in to the Shift Your Day Job podcast. If you've loved this episode, leave a review. It helps more women find the show. Feeling stuck in your career? Let's connect. Follow me on social media at Shift Your Day Job, or email me at shiftyourdayjob@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm Brittany Cates. Let's shift your day job together.